Welcome to The Daily Drive. This show is dedicated to keeping you educated, informed, and most importantly, driven to succeed. We want your feedback, so call us at 1-800-437-5121. Everyone on The Daily Drive Show team hopes you enjoy this show. Here's your host, Ken Knorr.
Welcome to the Daily Drive. I hope you're having a fantastic day, an incredible day, the best day of your life, and I hope that you're having the best week of your life as well. Today, we got a real good opportunity to meet with Dion Cornett. Dion is the CEO of ReachForce, and ReachForce is a really cool platform and service that will cleanse your data. Yeah, if you're in the data collection business, or you want to append data on to the data that you have about your customers, they are the guys to talk to. Dion is with us on the line now. Dion, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you, Ken. It's very nice to be on the show today. It's a great day.
Absolutely. So, Dion, you are the CEO of ReachForce. Tell us a little bit about ReachForce. What does ReachForce do?
So, Ken, if you don't mind a slight diversion to better understand what we do, it's helpful to appreciate a very significant trend that's going on in business today. And people can maybe relate to this in their personal life. Before you go to buy something, you're probably doing a lot of upfront research before you even engage with a vendor, whether it's something small or even buying a car. That same phenomenon is happening in the business world, where business buyers are going through what's called the buyer's journey, a big chunk of that without ever engaging a vendor and largely making up their mind. There's sort of a stat in the industry, 60% making up their mind before they even reach out to a vendor. And so when they do reach out to a vendor, it's important that the supplier of whatever they're looking for understands who that individual is, you know, what product recommendations to make, what content to deliver, what sales process or channel to route them into. And so if you think about what it takes to understand that individual, that's data. And so with that background, ReachForce partners with dozens of different firms that provide different snippets of data on individuals and businesses. And then we use that information, run it through our software service platform, and we populate the missing gaps in people's sales and marketing automation systems.
All right, so you populate missing gaps. So if I have somebody come to me, fill out a form on my website, let's just say, and I've collected some data about them, you're able to take that and give me a greater amount of information, and so, you know, fill in maybe demographics or company information. What kind of gaps can you fill?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And Informs a great place to sort of understand our technology. So if you go to a website and it has, you know, a dozen different fields on it to fill out the form, most people look at that and say, hey, that's sort of onerous, and they move on without filling it out. But if you go to the website and it maybe has three fields, first name, last name, email, you're like, all right, that's manageable, I'll do that. So we allow customers to put very simple forms out there. In many cases, it's simply first name, last name, email. And then as you're typing that, we're looking through literally 400 million records trying to figure out, okay, who is this individual? And we get some other clues, like we get the IP address, which can zero in on a company name or a particular geography. And we use all that information by a little pop-up, and it says, hey, is this your company and your address? And we'll provide sort of our top five guesses. And if you pick one of those, then we really, you know, you've sort of user selected, and we really know who you are. And it's not just sort of the, you know, the basic things you may think about your company's revenue, your employee base. There's literally 200 different attributes that we can provide that describe you and help give that vendor some clues in how they want to interact with you.
I gotcha. Just a high level question about this. How is GDPR affecting your business? Because that sounds like something that could play. Do you have an impact on you now, or?
Absolutely. And I think it's definitely making people more sensitive to the sort of data challenge overall. And then once people realize, hey, I have to have better data to service my prospects and my customers, then they look at, okay, what are the rules for using that? And so how I may market to a German citizen in California, the difference in interpretation, you know, GDPR is still being defined. But, it, you know, people want to have that information, right? Because if they mess up, the fines can be quite expensive. And so while GDPR places a little bit of friction in gathering some of the information that people may want, it also creates a higher sensitivity around having proper data so that vendors are engaging with customers in the proper way and not in a way that could create legal liability for them.
Very well said. And for my audience, just in case, I know you were right up on what GDPR is, but GDPR is the General Data Protection Regulation in the European Union. And it has to do with people's privacy rights and what is considered personal data. I think it's you can correct me if I'm off here, Dion, but I think that it looks like it's written a lot by bureaucrats who don't understand, because they even consider an IP address to be personally identifiable information, which really an IP address isn't in today's world. Is that maybe an overreach at this point or overreaction, you think?
You know, I believe the intent in the regulation is good. The basic premise behind it is that people should be able to control their own data, right? If there's someone who's collecting information on you and you don't want them to have that information, I sort of agree with the premise that people should have a right to ask to see that and maybe in some cases ask to have it removed. I think with any good intent, there's sometimes some things that have some unintended consequences. I don't know if that's necessarily the case with some provisions of GDPR, as you may know and your listeners should be aware. We're still sort of hashing through some of that stuff, but I think that the intent is good and things will get worked through.
I think you're right. I think the intent is good. I think there's still a lot of confusion in the marketplace about it. But one of the things that you alluded to, which I thought was really cool, was that you'll actually show the person filling out the form, hey, I think this is your address. You're actually getting validation from that individual. You're making the form fill out process easier. What do you call that product that does that suggested portion of filling out that form?
So that product is called SmartForm, and it's actually a subset of what we call SmartSuite. And so if you think about Microsoft Office and the different components you get in that, like PowerPoint, Excel, Word, we sort of have the same capabilities within our SmartSuite offering. We have a sort of SmartForms capability, a capability for list uploads, which can be very practical to marketers when they go to trade shows or they might be to do a list buy to enrich some additional information. We actually have a component, Data Refresh, that cleans up the information once it's in their database. And then we also allow people to access our pool of data with some sliders and set parameters, and we call that audience builder. But the thing that people have to appreciate is the amount of information out there is sort of staggering. And to sort of put this in a consumer context, you know, every time you use that grocery store loyalty card, they're literally collecting things on you, like do you buy dog or cat food? And the consumer space admittedly is much further along than the B2B space in leveraging this type of information. But there are statistically proven differences in how you market and the behaviors of cat owners versus dog owners. And so, you know, we oftentimes sort of will collaborate with some of the people in consumer space, understand what they're doing as clues, what we might want to do to B2B. But it's not unusual for a household to have 600 different attributes that are gathered on it. Now, as that translates into the B2B space, there's some very basic kind of things that people can understand you use for sort of marketing, segmentation, content delivery, things like employee revenue size, employee count, revenue size, the industry, the geography. But there's also little things that are very useful to companies like the credit score. If you're in the medical industry, and we've delivered this to a Fortune 10 conglomerate that has a big healthcare practice, you might hear about something like hospital bed count, right, because that helps you define your addressable market. If you're selling something like a PBX or a telephone system, you probably care a lot about lease expiration dates, right, because when people move offices, there's someone else coming to that office who might need a phone system. There's someone moving to a new office that might want to upgrade theirs. And so there's literally hundreds of attributes like this that we're gathering from a multitude of different inputs, and again, trying to populate based on the needs of our marketers and what they think best describes how to interact with their prospects.
That gets really complex. It's data-driven marketing. You guys are right in the middle of all of that with so much information. I can imagine that companies are finding that. How long has ReachForce been around?
We've actually been around for coming up on a decade. But I'd say the sophistication of what we can do now is markedly different. Even over the last year and a half or so, the sort of onslaught of very rich cloud development tools, big data tools, and I assume people have heard that terminology, but there's a number of technologies that facilitate that, and the ability to leverage those technologies, providing us capabilities that are night and day from what we offered even a few years ago.
You were appointed the CEO of ReachForce about a year and a half ago. Tell us about the journey of how you got to ReachForce.
So I'm a big believer in transparency and openness, and this is from 9 years at a company called Red Hat, which people may have heard was recently bought by IBM in the biggest software acquisition ever for $35 billion. But Red Hat's the leader in a segment of software called open source. And the premise is that you have this meritocracy of ideas where different communities can work on software code, and the best ideas in sort of this Darwinian process get adopted, and the other things go by the wayside. And even a company like Microsoft, with all their billions in the bank, never had the luxury of sort of having two teams work on the same, or multiple teams work on the same piece of functionality. That happens day in and day out in open source. And the reason that's facilitated is you have transparency and rules about how you share this code, and so that other people can build on your innovation and sort of advance it. And so this sort of concept around transparency and choice that was sort of bred into me at Red Hat and all the success it had, I took to another open source company focused on databases called MariaDB, where I ran sales there. And the company actually, at the time of me leaving, was the fastest growing open source database company. And then through that success, fortunately, I had the chance to take on my first CEO role here at ReachForce.
Before we kind of before the show began, we talked about this idea that there's a shifting of gears as you move from being an employee to being in management to being in leadership to being in C-level, then finally as the CEO. There's a shifting in. If you were to compare the differences of what you see. The differences of between being an executive leadership and the CEO role. Let's just go at that change there. What was the big shock to you? What was a big difference to suddenly be a CEO compared to your other roles?
Well, I think in both those capacities, I really learned what I needed to learn to be a successful leader, probably in second grade, right? When you first hear the golden rule, treat people like you don't want to be treated. And so I think that sticks with you wherever you go, and people abiding by that, right? Treating your peers and the people both above you and under you with respect. I think that goes a long way. But as you go from sort of a role where you're reporting to a CEO and you have peers reporting to that CEO and you guys can sort of, hey, what's he thinking? What should we do? And you have sort of that collaborative aspect. Some of that, I have to admit somewhat surprisingly, that some of that goes away when you're a CEO, right? You don't have a peer. And there is, as open, as respectful as I want to be toward people, there is a little bit of a different relationship. And so there's this sort of axiom is lonely at the top, which I don't think you really appreciate until you've done that. And I'd say that was probably the biggest sort of surprise for myself.
I totally agree with you. It is a very difficult. When I too had a journey from being an entrepreneur and then going into corporate for over a decade and then coming back out again. And the thing that I missed the most was that feedback. A CEO, your relationship with a CEO, a lot of times in executive management, is very candid. They'll tell you, what you're doing well, or what you're not doing well. And then you make that jump into you are the CEO. There's nobody that's going to tell you what you're not doing well. Even though you even might want that, you seek that feedback from your downline, if you will, from your executive team. You always feel that you're getting maybe not the whole piece if you're seeking that kind of 360 feedback?
I aspire to have an open relationship where there's a lot of transparency in the organization. But again, I just think there's some natural dynamic that takes place. And so people generally are going to try to figure things out a little bit before they're maybe as open with the CEO. And it's just one of the things you work through. And I think on whole, though, we do have a very collaborative, open culture here. It's a big emphasis on everyone sort of taking an entrepreneurial mindset, taking initiative, and figure out what needs to be done within their capacity without being told to do so, and sort of respecting people that, you know, take risk for the organization and encouraging that to some degree.
Totally went off in a direction here. I usually love to do a rapid fire thing out of the gate, and then I went into these deeper questions, but I'd be remiss not to go into my rapid fire section. I think my audience likes it, and we get to learn a little bit about you. So here we go. I'm going to give you some rapid fire questions. In a single word, characterize your life as a CEO.
Busy.
Married or single?
Married.
Congratulations. Got kids?
I have to admit, we put a lot of effort into that, and it just wasn't in God's will for us. But we're great aunts and uncles, or a great aunt and uncle.
Fair enough. I understand. You have animals?
We have the most beautiful little dog in the world you'd ever. Actually, a dog that we transplanted from Florida, a little 5-pound Maltese that has just the sweetest little face. People can't even believe she's real.
Wow, so she looks like it, like imitation, like too real to be true, or too cute to be true.
That's Gigi.
Dinner and movie out, or dinner at home and Netflix?
We try to be pretty social, so dinner with movie with friends, but sometimes you just want to snuggle up and take it easy, so it really depends on the mood.
I gotcha. No, both ways. Star Wars or Star Trek?
I think Star Trek's a little bit more intellectual, but I enjoy the fun of Star Wars. So that might be, again, one of those mood things.
You're a new addition to the crayon box. What color would you be and why?
Red.
Red? Why?
Just, so I went to the Naval Academy, and it's going through Naval history, there's a bunch of Naval heroes that you sort of are taught through, but one of my favorites was John Paul Jones, and I encourage readers or listeners to look his life up a little bit. But he was the guy that came up with things like he will not risk, cannot win, and during a very challenging battle, I've not yet begun to fight. But he also said, I have no desire to have any ship that's not fast, where I intend to go in harm's way. And so red's just that fast color. We got a lot to do in a little bit of time, so let's get there.
I like it a lot. What are your hobbies?
Yeah, I have to admit, a little bit of home renovation and biking and trying to stay pretty fit.
Home renovation, like home automation kind of stuff?
Home renovation. So we've...
Yeah,
we've built and restored and gutted and a bunch of stuff with houses. And I like the creative aspect of it, right? You get done, it's sort of your unique creation that started from nothing. And so there's something satisfying about building something lasting like that.
Well, that's pretty cool. Do you do some of that work yourself, or you manage it, or a combination of the two?
You know, when I was a younger man, Ken, it was all sort of my backbreaking labor. I have to admit, I outsourced a little bit more, but still tried to be sort of the guiding hand and, you know, help engineer some of the trickier things that we do.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to see something that you craft come out and it's finished, and there's something tactile about that, isn't there?
Yeah, and that ties right back to being a CEO, right? That's the coolest thing about the career I've had, is sort of seeing what we've built, and much of it from very, very early stages. And big part of that, I'll sort of dive in, maybe the most important part of that is sort of seeing people grow within these things that we've built at a personal and career level. As I sort of look back on my career, that will be the most rewarding part.
Your greatest satisfaction, or your greatest satisfying moment in business, does that have something to do with growing somebody?
Absolutely. I've been in lots of times in sales roles. You're hiring some people that are pretty junior, in some cases right out of school. And, you know, I have sort of a couple handfuls of favorites of people that I've been connected with through very early in their careers. So some of these people having very significant roles today. And yeah, that's the neatest part of having worked in business.
We finished this interview. You step outside the office and you find a lottery ticket that brings you $100 million. What do you do?
Well, I'd probably invest in my company so I wouldn't have to deal with the investors. So I'm teasing. I'd stay at it. I have to, I think humility is an important part of leadership, but I'll say I'm not at the job because I need a paycheck. I'm at the job because of building something and the impact on people and some of the things we talked about earlier.
Absolutely. So passion driven versus financially driven. I find that some of the most successful CEOs, it's not about the money. It's about something else. So what is it for you? Is it about growing? Go deeper there for me.
It is sort of the people. And I don't want to come across as sort of being too hokey here. But we've probably swapped out 75% of the people here and sort of developed a new culture. The caliber of people that I'm fortunate enough to work with here at Reach Force, it amazes me sort of day to day. The leaders, the way they step up. And I guess a year ago when I was CEO, I was having to direct a lot of stuff. Now my one-on-one meetings with my staff are them coming to me with great ideas that they've already begun executing on, and these things work. And so that really is a satisfying part. In some cases, I don't want to leave anyone out here of the organization, but have definitely seen a lot of people grow in this past year. And that's really the neat part about it.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us and listening to Dion Cornette and me chat today. We ran out of time and we're going to, as usual, push this to a part two. So make sure you tune in tomorrow to get your drive on with the Daily Drive. We'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our sponsor, That Company.
Why is That Company the white label digital marketing provider for some of the biggest agencies in the industry? Because we get results, we retain clients, and we deliver profitability. Visit www.thatcompany.com to find out how we can make your agency more profitable.
If you want to give us feedback, call us now at 1-800-437-5121 or drop by dailydriveshow.com. Make sure you add us to your Alexa daily briefing skill. Don't forget that you can listen to us live every day on WQBQ at 7:30 a.m. The show wouldn't be possible without the Daily Drive Show team, executive producer Jake Perrick, web guru Taj Royer, and the audio man with the plan, Shoddy. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow.